It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Despite a quarter century's worth of Pentagon studies into ways to combat rape and sexual violence within the military, it's estimated that one out of five women will be sexually assaulted during their time in the service. Recent data from the American Psychological Association indicates that assaults against men may be as much as 15 times higher than reported. The effects of sexual assault can be devastating to service members as well as their families. Attorney Susan Burke recognized the destructive impact of these attacks and has dedicated herself to helping serve victims of sexual assault. She's featured in the Academy Award-nominated documentary The Invisible War and has advocated across the country for changes to the way the military prosecutes sexual assault in their chain of command judicial system. She's also known for her involvement in the 2007 case against the military contractor Blackwater. This Saturday, Ms. Burke will be speaking at the University of Pittsburgh following a screening of The Invisible War. She joins us now by phone from Baltimore. Susan Burke, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
More than two decades ago, when you began your career, you dealt primarily with healthcare fraud cases. How did you go from white-collar crime to becoming the leading advocate for victims of sexual assault in the military?
Well, it's actually been an interesting road. I had always been interested in human rights. And so when we began as a nation to get information coming forward that we were torturing people at Abu Ghraib prison and elsewhere, I began to represent torture victims, the Iraqis that were tortured at Abu Ghraib. That led me to essentially a decade of doing work connected to wrongdoing in the theaters of war. And then from that, service members began to reach out to me, and I began to represent American service members who themselves have been victimized by a truly dysfunctional and broken military judicial system.
It is estimated that one in five women in the military are sexually assaulted. Why do you think that the issue is so common in the military?
Well, the problem is that the military has done a dismal job of convicting and incarcerating those that they have identified as sexual predators. They have a judicial system. They have their own intact military judicial system. But rather than having the judges and the advocates be trained lawyers, they allow military officials with no legal training to make the adjudicatory decisions about when to charge people, when to prosecute people. And this has led essentially to a lack of prosecution, a lack of convictions, and thus we have an embedded population of people who are known sexual predators within the military.
Coast Guard veteran Corey Choka was one of your first sexual assault cases in 2011, and you also notably defended a victim in the 2013 Naval Academy assault case. Your office has since made it a priority to represent victims of assault, even partnering with the human rights organization Protect Our Defenders. Talk about the challenges you face prosecuting cases like these.
Well, as a practical matter, service members have very few legal rights. The civilian courthouse doors tend to be slammed in their faces. So what we have done is brought forward a series of constitutional challenges saying that our service members who have suffered rape and then a failure of the military judicial system, that these folks are really being victimized by a lack of due process in the military system. We are encountering some very tricky legal terrain. There are several Supreme Court cases that essentially give the military a free pass on being held accountable in civilian courts. So we continue to challenge the legal reasoning of those cases. We continue to bring forward the reality of this broken system and are trying to chip away at some of the protections, judicial protections. These are not laws. These are simply judges deciding that the military should be protected. So we're trying to chip away at some of these decisions and make our nation a country where service members have the same access to the courts that you and I have.
What difference do you notice between sexual assault cases dealing with a female victim and those dealing with a male victim?
Well, I think as a practical reality, what we see is a level of retaliation and stigma attached to both genders with probably some additional vehemence around the retaliatory actions when the victims are male. So as a result of that, when you have rampant retaliation that is not being checked by the chain of command, you essentially begin to push the reporting underground. We see dramatic underreporting by the male victims.
What effect does this have on the victims? They are seeking justice, and then on top of the trauma that they've already experienced, they are being retaliated against. And this has to make it very difficult for you as their legal representative, because I'm guessing this takes a lot of the fight and the will to fight out of them.
What we are doing is placing service members, the very people that are willing to volunteer, put their lives on the line. Well, we're putting them in this situation that they have to make a choice. If they want to remain in the military and they want to continue to serve their country, and they run a dramatic risk if they report the crime of rape. People shouldn't have to make that choice. If you're a crime victim, you should be able to go in and report that you're a crime victim without that having negative repercussions for your career. But yet, if you're in the military, that's not what's happening. If you go in and you report, hey, I'm a crime victim, this is what happened, you end up having all sorts of professional consequences. You don't get promotions, you get edged out of jobs, your security clearances are threatened. So it is the awesome power in the hands of the military. It is too much power put in their hands when they also have this adjudicatory power as well as the power over people's careers.
So who ultimately is responsible for preventing this from happening? Who is responsible for stepping in and not allowing retaliation to happen?
Well, at the most basic fundamental level, what we need is Congress. Congress has the duty to oversee the executive branch, including the military. Congress is, by Constitution, Congress is supposed to set the rules that guide the military. What Congress has, the legislation that is existing now called the Uniform Code of Military Justice, that legislation is antiquated, and it allows the judicial process to be in the hands of people who have a bias, in the hands of the actual warfighters. So in order to fix this situation, we need members of Congress to reform the Uniform Code of Military Justice, to eliminate the adjudicatory power in the non-legal hands, and to use the military system of trained judges and lawyers to have these cases prosecuted and tried, rather than using this broken system that they have in place now.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is attorney Susan Burke, who has defended victims of sexual assault in the military, and she has also been involved in the film The Invisible War, which came out 3 years ago and has received incredible reviews. It's a film that has advocated across the country for changes to the way the military prosecutes sexual assault in their chain of command judicial system, as you just heard Ms. Burke articulate, and she'll be speaking at the University of Pittsburgh following a screening of The Invisible War this Saturday. Susan, can you talk about your involvement with the film The Invisible War and the response you've received in the 3 years since its release?
Certainly. When I first began, I began my efforts as a result of an individual contacting me with her own story. And I began to spread the word that I was willing to help. And completely separately, but fortuitously, on the other side of the country, an acclaimed director named Kirby Dick and Amy Ziering, his producer, they too began to spread the word that they were interested in this topic. We had both read the same articles and books by a wonderful journalist named Helen Benedict. And so just through networking, Kirby ended up reaching out to me. I talked with the group of women and men that had come to me. I explained to them that a movie was being made and left it up to them as to whether they would participate, but did encourage them to do so. And as a result, Kirby and Amy ended up making just a beautiful movie that really lays out the harms that are inflicted on people and what needs to be done in order to change this. And I do credit their movie with getting this issue the attention that it needs on Capitol Hill. After the movie was nominated for an Academy Award, far more lawmakers began to pay attention and educate themselves about this issue. So, you know, the fight continues. We have not yet gotten the legislation, but at least the movie has helped us kind of break through the lack of attention on the Hill.
You come from a military family. Your father, a retired Army colonel who served in Vietnam and Korea. What kind of insight has this given you?
Well, I think because I am a child that grew up on military bases, although I'm a civilian, I don't view the military as something separate. I view service members as just like us. I think that, unfortunately, with the way things are now, not that many people have direct connection to service members. So, you know, for me, I guess it's a sense of duty. I know these people need help, and I want to do my part.
And you mentioned that in addition to your work with sexual assault victims, you fought the case for Iraqi victims of torture at Abu Ghraib prison, winning them a $5.25 million settlement. What damages do instances like this do to America's reputation around the world?
Well, I think that it's so sad when we don't live up to our own constitution and to our own ideals. And the one thing I say to everyone is, you know, listen, we're a democracy. We don't sit back. We all need to just get out there and do what we can to make sure that our nation and our leaders conform their conduct to our collective values and our collective ideals. And so, you know, when I look at things like the unchecked amount of rape in the military, when you look at the war crimes, things like the torture, this is something it reflects poorly on all of us. This is our nation. So I'm a big believer that we can change things and that there is hope and that it's important for people to, you know, empower themselves, get involved, vote, get good people elected so that our nation can be what we want it to be.
And what have you taken away from your experience defending the Iraqi torture victims? It certainly seems that that was what led you on your current path, representing victims of sexual assault in the military.
Well, and what fascinated me is when we reached out, we would fly to the Middle East and we would interview the victims through translators. I have to say that my takeaway in dealing with all the different people, the American service members as well as the Iraqi victims, is a sense of awe at the resiliency of the human character. I mean, people who have been so terribly mistreated, so harmed in so many different ways, and yet, you know, they have the strength within them to fight for justice, to empower themselves, to fight back. And so, you know, I feel very privileged to be able to help those folks.
My guest has been attorney Susan Burke, who has represented victims of sexual assault in the military. She's featured in the Academy Award-nominated documentary, The Invisible War, which will be shown Saturday at the University of Pittsburgh, and Ms. Burke will be speaking after that screening. She joined us by phone from Baltimore on this Veterans Day. Susan Burke, thank you so much for being with us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up, we'll look at a documentary that focuses on post-traumatic stress disorder issues. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.